Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Boxing Day. It's the day after Christmas, so I hope everyone had a wonderful Christmas.
Still
Greg, do you have a
locked up.
comment already?
I want out of here. I'm still locked up.
No, you're not allowed out this time of year.
What
This
is
is our
that?
Under the Radar podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. I got John Salica to my side. David Griggs locked up below me. And we joined us from his dinner table is Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org. Rocco, got anything good to eat tonight? A
Just having a few snacks here, Chad.
few
Trying to get
snacks.
through the. Got a busy night tonight.
Lots of games tonight,
Yeah, lots of games.
right?
Can't wait. No, just lots of research while we get a chance to catch our breath.
Yeah, a little
Because,
day off.
Rocco,
yeah,
when am I going
Saturday's
to be
my
allowed to
favorite
get
day.
back on the plane with you? I'm still on the
What's?
no fly list.
Yeah, we'll work on that. Maybe 2025 is our year.
Maybe so.
Anyhow, this is Under the Radar, and John, why don't you tell everybody that doesn't know what it means to be under the radar?
Well, we have a couple stipulations here. So, of the 31 major, well, 31 Division I conferences, these are going to be outside of the regular conferences like the Big Four, as well as the Big East, the Atlantic 10, the Mountain West, the West Coast Conference. And then the second stipulation is you cannot be in the top 25, hence under the radar.
Yep. Anybody that is in the top 25 is not under the radar. Anybody that's in those nine regular multi-bid leagues is not under the radar. We will deal with those teams in our Monday night Hoops HD reports. We're going to deal with everybody else. And as we sit here right now, all the teams in these 21, 22 conferences, I believe, with 22, 22 conferences, none of them are in the top 25. I like to start with a feature conference, then go through the rest of them in alphabetical order. And for tonight's feature conference, I thought that a good place to start was with a conference that whose top team may not be under the radar much longer. The Drake Bulldogs out of the Missouri Valley Conference came in at 28 in both polls this week, which means that there's a chance by next week, if not 2 weeks from now, as long as they don't lose a game, this team could be a top 25 team. And it has been an amazing story this year, and I thought that'd be a good place to start. And Rocco, let me start off with you with this Drake team. It's just an amazing story. It's a completely new team this year, bunch of D2 transfers, and here they are, one of a very small handful of undefeated teams. I think we're down to four of them left in the nation.
Yeah, I mean it's an incredible story. And, part of the team is new. It's all new to the Drake logo and the Drake campus. But the four of the key players between Isaiah Jackson, Bennett Sturts, Mitch Mascari, and Dan Abreu, there's nothing new for those four playing for Ben McCollum. And I thought bringing in Cam Maniawu from Wyoming, who was one of the Mountain West's best freshman big men, might have been the best freshman big man in the Mountain West last year. That was just a sweet piece to plug in. Now they're not very big. He's only 6'8". You can tell in the Kansas State game, I was at that game. They were, if Kansas State was just going inside all night long, they probably could have won by five or more. But I mean, McCollum is so strategic. Mascari is such a deadly shooter. And Bennett Sturts is like a coach on the floor. This team's not going to blow away the KenPom numbers, which is why some of their power numbers you're seeing still in the 70s and higher. Because I just don't think they're freakishly athletic, which is why a lot of these guys were playing Division II at a high level. But they play really smart. They're great in clutch situations. They don't beat themselves. And that's why they keep pulling out all these wins against really good competition.
Yeah, I got their team sheet up there on the left, and ESPN has two metrics that show up in the team sheets: the SOR in the resume column, strength of record, and the BPI, which is a predictive metric there. I don't think I've ever seen a divergence between the same organization's two different metrics of 94 versus 11. It's amazing. But sorry, Griggs, go ahead.
That was a point I was going to make. I know Rocco is, he might not be the metrics guru that some of the other ones are, but he certainly knows more about it than us. And I know that we've played a football season, 11, 12 games. We're not 20 games in, and the data becomes more and more reliable and more consistent. But the one obvious thing about this Drake, and I don't want to just turn this into math class, the merit metric, as we call them, are very good, and the predictive metrics are not. And it's just kind of, are those to even out at any point, or where, like, how good is this team really? Because I think they're pretty good. I think, I don't know if they're 11th, like the strength of record has them, but I do think that they're perhaps better than what the predictive metrics have them. well. They did beat Kansas State on a very pro Kansas State floor in Kansas City. And
Yep.
some of the teams that they've beaten are pretty good.
Vanderbilt.
Vandy, yeah.
Vanderbilt's really good. That's probably their best win still. And Vanderbilt's only loss right now is against this Drake team. So
Yeah.
that speaks volumes as long, you know, the SEC is going to be a bloodbath. But I think Vanderbilt's got a solid chance to make the tournament themselves. Of course, if you're a Drake fan, that's going to be really critical to root for Vanderbilt the rest of the way, as well as Kansas State, which might not be as a good of a path. But yeah, I don't think these numbers are going to marry up at all. Like I said, the way Drake plays, you know, even when they get into league and they play the Valpos and the Evansvilles, the teams they could beat by 35, I just simply don't think they will. I think they'll win closer to 20. That's going to actually hurt their numbers. They're kind of like an under the radar version of Providence a couple of years ago, and maybe like South Carolina last year, where they just were really, really gritty, found ways to win, but they weren't good enough to blow you out. And you saw it like Drake's last game here before the break was against Green Bay. Everybody was laughing. It's Gottlieb. They just lost to Michigan Tech. They still only won that game by 10. And I don't think that was anything against Green Bay or Drake. It's just their style of play. They know what it takes to win, and they're just focused on winning. And I don't think there's anything that wrong with it, but I do think it exposes them a little bit to some upsets in a very tough Missouri Valley.
John, it's not like Drake is the only team in the Valley also that's put up some good numbers so far. And I got Bradley up there on the right side of the screen, coming off of back-to-back wins over San Francisco and Canisius, especially that win over San Fran about a little over a week ago. This is a very good Bradley team, though, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a team that now has a tier two win thanks to their home victory against the Dons. And let's not forget that Bradley, one of their better players, Connor Hickman, had transferred to Cincinnati during the offseason. But so far, with only losses against Washington State on the road and Santa Clara on a neutral floor, it's not like the Braves are skipping a beat right here.
Yeah, and we're going to get into it just a couple weeks later. January 8th, circle this game. Drake at Bradley already, very early in the Valley season. Huge game there. As far as the rest of the Valley, we see that Indiana State is in first place technically. By in fact, they've played two games, and some of these other teams have only played one conference game so far. But that's all going to start changing in a few weeks, next week or two here.
Another team that's kind of coming on, they've been a little disappointing, but I think they're starting to come to life. Now, they haven't done enough to make a run at the bubble the way Drake and Bradley have, but this Northern Iowa team might be more dangerous than what they appear.
Now, they're also coming off the loss to Washington State, so.
Yeah, I know that. Wazoo is Eastern Washington from last year.
I think, yeah, I got to see Northern Iowa on that same road trip in their blowout win over Montana. That was a super impressive display. They shot nearly 70% as a team. I don't think I've ever seen that good of a shooting performance in person. Of course, put up 104. They put up 101 on Northern Illinois, and they blew out Illinois Chicago on the road in their Valley opener earlier in the month. So it's just been an interesting dichotomy between the teams they're supposed to beat. They've absolutely destroyed everybody. And then in their five super competitive games, you know, of course, Irvine came and taught them a lesson at home. They didn't play well in Orlando either. But I thought they were at least competitive in the Wazoo game. Wazoo came off the Apple Cup loss. And the Wichita game, I think they would like to have that back. They let that one slip away down the stretch. So they're 0-5 in their key games, which is a bad sign for the top of the Valley games. But the fact that they can blow everybody else out, I think that cements them as like a top three or four team in the league.
And here's the upcoming schedule for this week as we get into conference play. Mine, except for that Indiana State-Ohio State game on Sunday, the rest of it is conference play. Drake starting with a tough Belmont team at home also. They could be a bit of a trap game there here.
Yeah, several of these teams have strung together wins, albeit not against strong opponents, but there's a lot of teams that have won like 4 out of 5, 5 out of 6, 5 in a row. It's looking like a good league.
Yeah, and watch out for the Sycamores. Like, they ended pretty hot there, and they really – were lost in November. Of course, new coach Matt Graves there. He's promoted as assistant. But, you know, Samaj Teal could be an all-Valley type of player. And Illinois State had a great road win at Cornell. I saw that Cornell team a couple weeks ago. I like the two ISUs coming into this month.
Don't write off this Murray State team either. I know they suffered two losses out in the Diamond Head, but one of them was an overtime loss. So and the other one was to Nebraska, who ended up winning the thing.
Right.
But let's Let's jump over to the rest of the conferences, get moving here through them. We'll start the America East. Sleeka, let me start with you. Not much in terms of, well, there really weren't any, two only wins for the conference back over the last weekend. One of them being Lowell's win over BU, Binghamton with a win at Army. But, I guess what concerned me a bit about this whole league here is Vermont goes to Dartmouth and they lose the game, but they lose it by 30.
Well, they lose it by 30, but for some reason they were still having a big party at Vermont. Now, that may have had something to do with their soccer team winning their first national title, but at least now they can start focusing on basketball again. But I still think the team that is going to be remain in the discussion is going to be the Black Bears for Maine. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, but by their standards, 6-6 and actually close to the top half of the country in the net, that's going to be cause for optimism.
Yeah, they really kind of God, they had a, they really had a chance against Stony Brook, but ended up falling just short.
Yeah, but I mean that says something that a road game, they were right in that game, but I'm really looking, Rocco, at this Lowell team, and that's where I'm focusing now because I mean we haven't played a conference game yet. Vermont has plenty of time to turn it around, but they just haven't shown me anything in the non-conference play at all.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. Lowell's certainly established a five-game winning streak coming into – it'll be a six-game winning streak by the time league play starts in a week because they have a non-D1 game on Monday. But, yeah, I mean, I like the starters with Covington and Brooks, Mincy, Somerville. A lot of good experience. Four of those guys are seniors, plus a couple – four more seniors off the bench. It's a super veteran team. But I do think Vermont, like it needs to be noted that Shamir Bogues and TJ Long, arguably their two best players – missed most of December. Long's first game back was that ugly Dartmouth game, and he either was not all the way healthy, or he just had a really bad break. Tried to break back in game. His numbers were horrible. Bogues' numbers were horrible. I know how good those players are. They're both proven. I think Vermont is gonna. It might not. It might take a couple more weeks, but I think Vermont's gonna get hot again like they usually do, late January, early February. But yeah. But Lowell's got the bullseye coming into the league play, and that's pretty exciting for the league, I think.
Yeah, 2 points for Long in that Dartmouth game,
He was awful.
a turnover that shot 14%. Yeah, hopefully he can get a little better than that. It's going to be a very long season for Vermont if he doesn't.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule here, Vermont's game is hosting somebody called Elms, while Lowell is hosting somebody called. Yeah, let's just kind of move on from the schedule here. There's not much here. We're still a little bit
Wow.
away, another week away from getting to conference play here. Yeah, a couple notable non-conference games: NGITs at Washington, New Hampshire's at Iowa.
Boston U at Maine. That one's interesting. If you're gonna
That is
watch a
a.
game, watch that one.
Greg's over in the A Sun Conference, where if you just go by overall records right now, we could be in for a great season this year because. Nobody has really pulled away, although I personally think Lipscomb is going to get there at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we've seen log jams in this conference before, if not at the very top. It seems like last year and most years, 2 and 8 are not separated by very much. If you're going off of who I think is the best so far, I do think it's still Lipscomb, albeit they've come up a little bit short lately, but I still like them compared to what the rest of the league has done. Queens is a good story, but they're transitional, and I don't know how. I do think that they're going to be kind of dangerous once they get into the league play, but probably not as good as the top of the league. I've not seen anybody that I've liked as much as Lipscomb.
I think that's fair to say, and there was not much in terms of there were no D1 wins out of this conference at all this past week here, and looking ahead, Lipscomb's got somebody called Asbury, but then by next Thursday we're getting into the start of conference play here. Lipscomb
Yeah.
starting off at Jacksonville, North Florida hosting Austin Peay, Stetson at Queens. That should be a blowout,
Austin Peay with some big wins early, kind of disappointing lately. It'll be interesting to see if they sort of snap out of it in conference play. And Eastern Kentucky, a very nice paycheck coming their way on Monday after the game.
Local rivalry, isn't that a
Yeah.
part of it? I don't know. Don't we have a mythical conference for the state of Kentucky?
We might.
The Bourbon Trail. It's the Bourbon Trail.
The Bourbon Trail League. It's coming next year.
Some of
Yeah.
the some schools pay better than others. Louisville is rumored to pay very well if you can get on their schedule.
How about a slightly better conference here, Rocco, the Big South, where, among other things, High Point with a nice win at Southern Illinois over the week this last weekend.
Yeah, it's not an easy place to go. Carbondale, they go out there, they get it done. They'll get them back at home next year, start off a two-year series. And High Point's had the talent. They've been a little underwhelming because they had a little bit of a rough loss down in the islands to kick off that tournament against Missouri State, which sent them into the loser's bracket, where they ended up with two dogfights with bad teams, ODU and Hampton. In comparison to the talent level of High Point is the way I'm speaking. But getting the North Texas win, getting the App State win, and getting the SIU road win, those are their last three D1 games, Chad. I think they're starting to finally figure it out. I think also – this is going to sound a little crazy, but I think part of the problem was they actually took on maybe too many good players on their roster that it's hard to keep everybody happy. They go like 10, 11 deep, and if they're fully healthy. Now, they haven't been fully healthy, but once they are, that's a challenge for Coach Huss because so many of these guys are good enough to be stars in the Big South, and only five guys can be on the court at the same time.
Yeah, there's a home game against Norfolk State. They're running to conference play coming up. Norfolk State team, that's top of the MEAC, but I expect them to win that still.
They could try for a waiver. You know, just tell the NCAA and Big South, we've got too many players. We need to use more than five.
We're going to play eight on it.
Upcoming schedule here, the Big South, though. Stalica, I mentioned Norfolk State at High Point. Other than that, you know, kind of ending up non-conference play, coming in Thursday, we start into conference with a few interesting games, at least. Longwood and Winthrop in action.
And then Presbyterian has a nice in-state matchup at South Carolina, but against an SEC opponent, going to be way above their heads.
Let me stick with you, Salika. I actually go backwards conference. I somehow skipped the Big Sky. I didn't mean to do so, but Salika, Big Sky.
I've been asleep all season anyway.
Well, I think, you know, Salika, what about Northern Colorado, especially the road win at Denver over the weekend?
Well, this is a team that's actually in the top 100 as far as their overall strength of schedule, and winning a front range game is always going to be a big bonus for the Bears right here. And then you look at teams like Montana, and surprisingly, Montana State and Idaho State are also within the top 200 of the net. But my guess is they're probably going to be competing with the Montana schools for the top spot in the conference.
Yeah, Rocco, Montana, you know, they lost at San Francisco. They were competitive in the game. But Montana State, who we expected to be in this conference, they got crushed by a TCU team that I don't think is an NCAA tournament team. The margin of victory is what shocked me.
Right, yeah, and TCU just had the big injury too. So, you know, maybe they like running things through Noah Reynolds, our friend that was dominating for Green Bay last year. He's now on TCU, had a great game in that game, but yeah, I'm a little surprised too. I think Montana State's still trying to figure out what they want to do. Sometimes when you're in a mismatched bye game, you experiment a little bit more, but they got crushed in a similar fashion the weekend before against USC, fell short at Riverside as well. So they're coming in to this Idaho matchup next week to kick off league play with a three-game losing streak. I think that's the key is Montana State should have the most talent, them or Montana. But they're still going through a lot of struggles. They're not dominant. This league's pretty wide open. I was actually impressed with Idaho themselves. Blew out Pacific on the road.
Yeah.
And Colton Mitchell's he still qualifies as a freshman. He's the guy they took from Idaho State in conference swap. Had 6 threes, 32 points. That guy's a seriously talented player. The Vandals could be dangerous. I know they're 5-8, but they've in some of their wins, they won at Kansas City. They beat UC Riverside by double digits. They've shown flashes, and a lot of their losses are to much bigger schools.
Griggs, the upcoming schedules on the screen, and we've got a circle Tuesday night. There's one of the Wallas is missing, but that is Walla Walla at Portland State, one of our favorite schools.
We love Walla Walla. we've had a Walla Walla wedding.
But Griggs, let me stick with you. Jump over to the Big West, which has been very impressive so far. And there's, I think, two teams we got to discuss here. Although one of them did suffer a loss this past week, the other one did not.
Yeah, and the two teams you're talking about are UC San Diego and UC Irvine. Irvine put some miles on their odometer this weekend, if you want to start out there. They went to Belmont, which is not an easy place to go, but what I would say is that that's a long trip to a place that's hard to win. But a team, and this is the standard, if a team that's inside the bubble will win that game most of the time. And Irvine won it. And I'm like, it wasn't pretty. They had to come from behind to do it. They actually had to come from way behind, but they got the win. And I'm like, that is evidence of a bubble team or a better than a bubble team. They went and won a game that was hard to win. And then you would have thought, while it was the second game in 3 days, the easier of the two, they just looked awful at Duquesne. I don't know if they were tired. I'm sure they were tired. But I Rocco, you guessed the committee. You do it very well. How is the committee going to evaluate that trip? Because as a Hoops HD committee member, I look at that and I say, yes, it was hard. But that's what you have. Those are the games you have to win if you want to get inside.
Yeah, that's why the deck is so stacked against schools like this and leagues like this. But it is unfortunate because I think as a staff, they probably went into the trip like, we'd love to get a split. This is two very difficult places to play. Belmont's got an incredible track record. Duquesne's a team, you know, kind of like we talked about Indiana State a little bit earlier, where they got a promoted head coach. He really, really struggled to start, but they have talent, and they've had like two or three really great performances before the break. And Irvine, so it's a combination of Irvine catching them on a bad day, also a little bit not quite 100% due to the travel, and then also you add the fact that Duquesne played Irvine in this exact same spot last year right before the holiday. So in order for a money consideration, they agreed to go to Duquesne 2 straight years. So I think they were a little extra prepared versus a normal team you would play on the road, like if they would have played, even if they would have played, who's the other team in town? Pittsburgh, maybe. So yeah, like a lot of things worked against them in that matchup, particularly. And I think the staff probably approached it like, let's go get a split. But I think at the end of the season, you know, the good news is UC San Diego is so strong right now that those games will matter for the resume, and hopefully a couple of these other teams that are third, fourth, fifth will actually matter. But we're talking about such a long shot, sadly, that because I think their best win's at Northern Iowa right now, and they're
Now,
pretty far off the field themselves.
yeah, but in looking at UC San Diego, they have something that Irvine doesn't, and that is a win against what I think
Oh yeah, big
is
time.
on the road, might be Utah's only home loss. Utah State's probably inside the bubble, and even if like, and they are a super difficult team to beat at home, they went in there and won. They have the two losses. Only one has you holding your nose. The other one actually is one I don't see you can ding them for at all.
No,
This is
it's
a
actually
team that has
impressive.
just performed. When I look at this, if I am, well, if I'm a Hoops HD committee member, I'm saying this team belongs inside the bubble all day long. And if I'm guessing the committee, I hope you would guess they would say the same thing. That is a damn good resume.
As
I agree.
Slika, you've got the 2-bit Big West up on your screen right there. You know, do you think? What do you think? You think we have? There's a real. You think there's a shot at it happening?
I think right now I would give UC San Diego an edge just by virtue of having at least one tier one win. They both have tier three losses, which is going to make you hold your nose. I guess one of the mitigating factors for UC Irvine, they do at least have a couple wins in tier number two as well. So if you just go by how many wins you have against the top two tiers, I would give them a bit of an edge. And then they also have four tier three wins to three that UC San Diego has. So I think UC Irvine, they're going to be kind of on the cut line right now. So I would probably say right now the answer is no.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it would be really neat if somehow UC San Diego could end up getting an at-large bid. I don't know that any school in its first year eligible for the NCAA tournament has ever gotten an at-large bid in history. We'd have to do a
I
little
can only
research
think
into
of
that.
two schools that got. Now, again, I haven't been around as long as some people, but like North Dakota State was out, got the auto bid the first year
But it
they
was
were eligible.
auto bid, but it wasn't auto bid.
Yeah.
They probably would not have gotten it had it not been the auto
They would
bid.
not have.
Right.
No, I think they were, I forget what their seed was, but it
Yeah.
was not inside ball.
No, and it has happened that a first year eligible team has gone in before.
Yeah,
As an
Northern
at
Kentucky.
large, though, is the would be the really neat thing.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule here. UC San Diego has accidentally accidentally scheduled a team. I guess accidental. I don't know, I think that's their only game in the next 12 days. It is as far as Irvine. They got a non-conference game at California Baptist, and they got a conference game at Cal Poly coming up. Not starting conference play already did start in this league.
Meanwhile, I think Cal State Fullerton is hoping they get the Nobel Prize for winning on Saturday.
Nobel at Cal State Fullerton. This is what you get in the weekend between Christmas and New Year's, guys. St. Thomas at UC Riverside, though. Keep an eye on that one. That could actually be a good game.
Yeah,
it will be good.
Over in the CAA, though, Sleeka, let me go back to you here, where, once again, Hampton still in first place in the virtue of the base of that early conference game they played against A&T. But I think more of the story here has been College of Charleston, who did pick up two wins out in the Diamond Head.
They picked up two wins, but that was also in the loser's bracket, seeing as how they did end up losing a close one against Oregon State in their opener. So granted, they do get a very nice win against Loyola Chicago that's going to turn out, and at least they avoid stubbing their toe by beating Charlotte. But elsewhere in the league, not much else to look at this week, at least.
I would say, Rocco, I know you've been on this Elon team all season, and I'm joining you on it. I mean, it was a home game, but it was a decent Greensboro team they beat, and I think this could be a this team could be right up there at the end of the season.
Yeah, and TK Simpkins got hurt in that ETSU game right before, so he didn't play in the Greensboro game. I'm waiting to hear how long he's going to be out. But the fact they won without him after getting embarrassed at Freedom Hall in Johnson City, that was a good resolve by the Phoenix overall. And they'll squeeze in a Marshall game on Saturday before they hit the CAA for real. So keep your eye on the Simpkins status. But I think if they do have a full strength team, they get to open up league play with the A&T Hampton. You know, maybe they can knock off Hampton and get first place themselves. I like the way they've played throughout the non-conference. I'm with you, Chad. I also think Wilmington has played extremely well here in December. So I've got my eye on them. Obviously, always a really good home team, and that's no different this year. But I think just some of those latest performances, they've double-digit wins over both Gulf Coast and Asheville, not easy teams, and they made it look easy.
Yeah, here's the upcoming schedule. Spartanburg Methodist at UNC Wilmington. Coming up Saturday, though, this is the CBS, part of the CBS Sports HBCU Classic. This will be on national TV on CBS, the Howard Hampton Battle for the Real HU. That's actually a huge rivalry game also. The North Carolina A&T game actually is the second game of that doubleheader, both on
also
CBS.
A really, really big rivalry.
Yes,
so two actually. Good ones, really. A great showcase for all four of those schools on a big platform. And I hope the fans into it because, as you mentioned, like when it's at those campus sites, those games get wild.
Also, keep a lookout on could be a battle for first place Thursday. Hampton at College of Charleston as we get into conference play. The first place Hampton team go to Charleston,
but and then they go to Elon. That's a tough trip for the first place Pirates.
There we go. Let's go ahead and jump right over here, Greg, to the Conference USA, where I think there's a couple of teams that we can discuss. But who do you want to talk about?
Well, Liberty is. There's a lot of teams to kind of go over here because kind of what we said about the Missouri Valley. There's a lot of teams that have strung together wins lately. Western Kentucky's on a roll. La Tech's on a roll. I know Middle Tennessee just lost to Tennessee, but they've been looking really good. But as far as who's carrying the flag, it's got to be the Flames of Liberty right now. They're still the best team on paper. They've got the best metrics. Are they kind of building the kind of resume that they need to get inside the bubble? And the answer, I think, definitely is possibly.
The building the kind of resume, if you're going with a resume with one loss, yes. But other than a game at La Tech, there's not much left on the schedule here ahead. That's my problem with it. And
yeah, the other thing is
– go ahead, Rocco.
Rocco, you might make this point or elaborate on it. I can't help but think the way these teams are playing now, and I know that this is sort of a biased thing to say, is that a lot of teams presently on the court are better than their metrics. And it's hard to beat Western Kentucky. It's hard to beat Middle. It's hard to go to Sam Houston. It's hard to go to La Tech. It's hard to go to UTEP.
But, like, but Greg's, let me bring Rocco in on this also here, though. At the end of the day, if this is your resume, you're going to have a couple of tier two wins and nothing else to hang your head on. And that's my problem with it, Rocco. I mean, yes, if you literally go 30-1, I'm there with you. But short of that, I don't know.
Yeah, this is where, you know, this is the type of league and the type of teams where you might not ever get a quad one opportunity, but you might get a bunch of twos and threes. And right now, this is also where the wins above bubble can really even the playing field, depending on how much the committee looks at it. But I think you have the six representatives from the under-the-radar schools, or at least non-power schools, right? And then you have the six representatives from the power schools. I think their job would be to stick up for a team like a Liberty or a Drake, right? So right now, you look at wins above bubble, they're clearly in. They're a 35 overall. And you get into Conference USA play and you just go off the net, which is all you're going to do to sort your results. And you have La Tech at 94. You've got Middle Tennessee at 120. You've got Western Kentucky 119. You've got a couple in the 140s now. And Sam Houston ain't even in the 150s. So a lot of the league games are not going to be nothing burgers. They're actually going to be meaningful and, of course, hard games, as we all know.
Okay, I've actually got Liberty with the NCAA wins above bubble at 50 right now, which is a lot worse than 35. Yeah. That's as of today's update.
Yeah, and I can tell you the difference. So eventually the preseason stuff's going to go away on the wins above bubble. If you look at just the raw data, which it will be 100% by, I think, February, they're 35 right now.
Why aren't they using the raw data now?
I know. Because they're just going straight off of the Torvik database, which has baked in.
Yeah, it's a merit-based metric.
They should, but it really doesn't matter, because by the time the committee even does their February, whatever it is, Super Bowl preview with the reveal, and they meet for the first time, all that's going to be cleaned up. So in reality, it doesn't matter.
I want to throw one other thing at you, Rocco, though, and this is never going to get any better because they're done with non-conference games. They got a 3:30 non-conference strength of schedule, and that's awful. If you went to the season thinking you had a chance to win games, why are you scheduling the 330th worst non-conference strength of schedule and throwing their three non-D1 games on top of that?
I don't think they really believe they had a realistic shot to be in this position, and then they go and win that tournament. Kansas State, of course, a little – down compared to what everybody expected, or you might have even expected them to bail out of that tournament. They end up staying, they win it. But Liberty's also one of those anomaly private schools with a bunch of money that can buy bad teams, and that's what they did.
Yeah. So I guess you're telling me you don't enjoy Rust going to Ruston to
Tech. So think of
what that's what I'm telling you, John. And it brings up a good point. You're looking for what separates them from other teams that you're looking at for the last few spots on the bubble, the strength of the schedule and the non-con strength of schedule is going to set them apart in a bad way.
In a bad way, yeah. And I think that's why, the wins above bubble could be helpful, because even when you're beating really, really bad teams, even when they beat FIU this year, it's going to be like getting a bunt single. It's going to go in the right direction, but eventually you'll lose, and you'll lose probably three or four in this league, right? Yeah. Like, I don't think anybody's going to go better than two losses in this league, and that'll probably be just enough to keep them too close to the bubble to put in.
Yeah. Couple of quick notes here also before we move on. Top of the screen there, it's actually 13-4. There's not quite updated, but CUSA has been destroying the WAC, and their challenge is one game left coming up this week. Last score on there was Monday night's game, Tennessee, Middle Tennessee. At the end of the day, it's going to look like an 18-point blowout, but Middle Tennessee was there in that game with the number one team of the nation the entirety of that game. And this could be an MTSU team to keep an eye on as we head through.
Yeah, it really is.
Season two. Upcoming schedule, though, Liberty's the game against Western Kentucky Thursday as we get into conference play. Before that, it's just not much of anything to watch other than maybe Western Kentucky at Michigan. Salika, let me go back to you over in the Horizon League, where how about the Penguins? First place.
Penguin fever.
I almost feel like we should take it over to the puppet. I mean, given Youngstown State, they did get a win at Wright State as part of those three wins right there. So you got to give them credit right there.
They
Milwaukee.
sure damn right they did. The
Yeah,
Penguins don't mess around.
Milwaukee's going to be ahead, at least as far as the metrics at the moment, as is Purdue Fort Wayne. Those are going to be the two teams we'll probably have to keep an eye on. And of course, you can never count out Northern Kentucky.
And Griggs, I don't think we can count on Oakland. They went to the Diamond Head. They beat Loyola by one, and then they had two overtime losses. They were in all three games they played out there.
Oakland's a team that you want to keep an eye on, and you might not think that just by looking at their record, it's not good at all. But they've been playing better and better and better, and I think the wins are going to come. And judging on how they played in the last 2 weeks, while they've still lost more than they've won, they've looked better than just about everyone in this conference, including my beloved Penguins. Rocco, any chance, say Youngstown State were to win this auto bid and get into the first four, any chance they're allowed to play at home instead of having to go to Dayton on sheer fact that it's just so awesome, Penguin favorite?
Yeah, no chance. But I think they are good enough to avoid Dayton if that makes you feel better.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There's the rest of the upcoming schedule. Youngstown is hosting Detroit Mercy, which is not the pushover game it's been in recent years. And then they're at IU Indy. Quick note, that is not a typo in the 10 line. That is the school's name. It is Morris Robert, and we have confirmed that.
Yes.
That is a big game on New Year's Day where Purdue Fort Wayne does go to Northern Kentucky. See if one of those teams can get a little bit of separation.
Rocco, over the Ivy League, I don't want to do it, but we got to give a shout out to Princeton with that come from behind win over my Scarlet Knights over the weekend. And it was a heck of a game, actually.
Yeah, they got after each other. It was the Never Forget Tribute Classic, I believe. Caden Pierce hit the game winner, but that back and forth sequence with a minute and a half to go each direction was one of the best finishes of the first half of the season anywhere. And Princeton, even though they've been a little disappointing, and yes, I think they are down a piece this year, given some of the situations with their roster, obviously still very competitive and highly skilled with Mr. Pierce and Mr. Lee there. Really good win. And of course, they were very up for that game, that opportunity. That was actually originally going to be a Rutgers Arkansas showdown before the coaching change at Arkansas. So Princeton filled in the gap, and I'm sure Rutgers never wants to play them again.
We've not had good luck recently, and this is more of a traditional rivalry for Rutgers and Seton Hall. Is even everyone talks about Rutgers Seton Hall, but Rutgers Princeton goes back longer than almost any rivalry, and goes back longer than any rivalry in foot on the football side. It was the first ever
First
football
game.
game.
But the league in general is fantastic, like we usually say. I think the emergence of Dartmouth, they were kind of overlooked by everybody as the eighth place team, but I don't think you can overlook a team that just blew out Vermont by 30. At least when you go to Hanover, you're going to get a little bit of a fight, it looks like. So really curious what that looks like. Keno Lilly's had an outstanding year for Brown. They've overcome the loss of their center to have a really quality first half, in my opinion. I think Cornell's very dangerous, one of the best shooting teams in the country. And Yale's deadly as well with their shooting. So, and Columbia's got the best player in the league. So this is such an awesome Ivy League.
Yeah,
It is.
Yale with a real nice performance against Akron in the Sun Bowl, and then just a 1-point loss to UTEP in the championship game there.
Controversial too there, Chad.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, good showing either way.
And pretty soon that's going to be the only Christmas tournament that's going to be going on.
Here's the upcoming schedule at Rutgers. We just got done with Princeton. Now we get Columbia coming in on Monday night. So that's actually a very interesting game.
Could be. They've had a
Penn
lot
at
of
Penn
reps.
State. Yep. Akron at Princeton, Penn at Penn State, a few of the others. Not quite a couple weeks of conference play. This is one of the last conferences to get going with only a 14-game conference season. Griggs, over in the Metro Atlantic, though, we've got I guess we could talk a little Marist. They did pick up an overtime win over UMBC and I believe their only game this past week.
Now they blotted out that record against that amazing 364 strength of schedule. I mean that's
Good enough to be in Conference USA. Come on.
yeah, it really is. But in comparison to the rest of the league, they probably are the best team. They're 8-2. They're the team that I've kind of they're the team that jumps out to me the most.
How about Mount St. Mary's forcing Jim Larrañaga into retirement?
I was about to go there, yeah. Rocco. Jim Larrañaga's last game was a home loss to a team from the Metro Atlantic. How about that?
Yeah, and it was Mount St. Mary's first win over a power conference team since 1995. So shout out to Donnie Lynn, new head coach. He's doing a really great job, 8-4. They've beat Fairfield, they beat Howard, they beat Bucknell in double overtime. They've got some good mojo going into their first experience together in the MAAC, which, Chad, this league's just way too big now. It's like the mini Atlantic. It's the under the radar Atlantic 10 with too many teams.
Yeah, it is. I thought 11 was, I thought 10 was a better number than 11 even. Now we're up to 13. It's a little rough on me here, but
there'll be some good stories. I think Merrimack's really, really tough, especially defensively as always. And Sacred Hearts had some really interesting results where they blew out Iona by 24 at one point, the league opener, I believe. Something crazy is going to happen here. I'm just not sure what.
There's some good. I mean, Iona picked up the road win in Colgate this weekend. That's a nice win. And of course, then we have Canisius in this conference.
They're going to beat somebody. I think they're getting closer. They're starting to lose by single digits now.
They're in the
Centenary. They are definitely in a conversation for the worst team in D1 for the Centenary Award. Mount St. Mary's going to George Mason. That's kind of a little bit funny after they.
They're just trolling Jim Larrañaga.
I mean, you go to Larrañaga's old school right after you force him into retirement. That is a, how about a quirk in the schedule there? The rest of the games are up there on the screen, but. Let's just jump right over to the next conference here.
I think the real work is going to be on Sunday there. Not Manhattan going to a Sacred Heart, but Manhattanville going to Sacred Heart.
Sleeka, your neck of the woods is the Mid-American Conference, so let me throw this one over to you here, where we didn't see much in terms of notable action. I mean, Kent State, who's looked really good so far, lost, but they lost to Alabama.
Well, hard to blame Kent State for losing a game right there. They still have the best metrics among the Ohio teams, at least. And then you look at Mother Miami, OU, and Akron probably rounding out the top four right here.
Yeah, and, like I said, there wasn't that much in terms of action. So maybe in the Mid-America, we're looking more ahead to where we're going to next week. And Griggs, we've been circling this game for weeks now. Hindenburg at Kent State on Sunday.
I mean, it's going to be. I think Kent State is going to blow them up. And Akron going to Princeton, sort of a semi-interesting game there as far as under the radar.
Toledo at Purdue, but East-West U at Northern Illinois. Yeah, unfortunately, this is yet another week until we get any action in this conference.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right over.
Must have had about 5 or 6 D1 games this year.
Rocco,
Carver Bible no longer a countable opponent. If East West U is countable, then Carver Bible should be as well.
Rocco, how about over the MEAC, where Norfolk State got the win over Grambling in the Chris Paul HBCU Classic, and team has been looking a little better, I think, than what we normally see from the top of the MEAC.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, the road win at UC Davis back around Thanksgiving was very impressive. Beat a good Davis team from that loaded Big West by 21. I thought they won that championship with the Chris Paul event, beating Alabama State handily and then Grambling the very next day with no rest. They'll get a crack at High Point this Sunday. That'll be pretty interesting, I think, because Norfolk's freakishly athletic. They've got a couple really, really talented players led by Brian Moore. I like this team quite a bit. I think they should be the favorite. But this Delaware State team also went to that same event and beat those exact same two teams. This Hornets team has a 4-game Division I, not non-Division I games here, Division I win streak for the Hornets. It might be the longest I've seen in a long time here in the Stan Waterman era. It's probably the longest. They'll get a crack at St. Joe's on Saturday. And then I think South Carolina State's very, very gritty, very tough. I think, they battled a little bit with Northern Kentucky before falling by 11, beat USC Upstate the game before that. So there's some good, and Howard's the preseason pick. So I think there's a good top four or five this year. It's a great year for the MEAC so far.
Please don't remind me about South Carolina State. That was nearly a major disaster for a certain school off the radar.
They fight, man.
I'll tell you, if this was last year, we would have been circling the Coppin State Georgetown game on Saturday. But the way Georgetown's playing, I don't know that Coppin State has much of a shot.
They got their first win, though. They did get their first win over Navy. That was good.
And next Tuesday night, Norfolk State at Tennessee. I mean, if Tennessee plays the way they did against Middle, there might be more of a story here than
Yeah, I bet they don't.
No, I don't think they will either.
Griggs, we got to go all in on High Point.
Griggs, yeah. Northeast Conference time. Central Connecticut did pick up a win over Quinnipiac. A solid win over the weekend.
Yeah, a Quinnipiac team that I know we've already talked about the Metro Atlantic. We like them in the preseason. They haven't exactly shown out so far, but I think once they get into the conference play, they'll be pretty good. And that one's just sort of a fun in-state matchup. I think this Central Connecticut team is better than the rest of the conference, and to build on that point, they're better than most of the teams we typically see out of this conference. I think that I don't want to say they'll run the table all the way through the conference tournament, but I do think they'll run away from the rest of the pack, host the tournament, and win it. And Chicago State, you got to believe they've never won a game. It's been a long time since they've won a game as a member of a conference.
Yeah, Chicago State not on pace to even qualify for the NEC tournament, but they haven't had played conference games yet, so we'll see what happens.
And they got a shot at a win this Sunday.
At Illinois, that might be slightly above their heads. While Central Connecticut is playing Johnson and Wales of Providence.
So, yeah, how about that? The Friars.
Stalika, Ohio Valley Conference time. We actually have three teams that are undefeated at the top of the conference. Morehead, SEMO, and Little Rock, albeit very early.
Yeah, and also a byproduct of getting home games in the case of Morehead and SEMO right here. Now, Morehead, they were going back and forth with Tennessee State, and it was looking like the Tigers might be able to get the road win, but they fell apart late in that game. And SEMO, a little more comfortable win against SIU Edwardsville.
And Rocco, if you ever saw a conference, even more so than conferences like the MEAC or the SWAC, that looks like it is clearly on its way to Dayton for its champion. I think that this year's OVC is that conference.
I'm afraid you're right. Yeah, there's really not a lot of great wins that the conference accumulated, unless you want to count Western Illinois' win at San Jose State on opening night. I was there. But anyway, it's a Dayton league, I believe, as well. Impressed with SEMO's start. I thought they got off to a really good start. Two home games, so take it with a grain of salt, but beating Edwardsville by 16. I like Brad Korn. Morehead stayed at 2-0 as well. That game against Tennessee Martin was absolutely bonkers for them to come back and somehow win that game in overtime. And Tennessee Martin was clearly angry about the circumstances, because their next game, they went to Southern Indiana, Chad. And you know what the score at halftime was? 52-15 in a league game.
Ridiculous.
And Southern Indiana came in hot.
It's a respectable Southern Indiana team. It's not hard to be respectable. You just got to be top. You got to be 90, top 300 90. in the net to be respectable in the OVC. But right. we do want to give a little shout out here to the Little Rock team. They did have to cancel their game against Eastern Illinois following a sad tragedy. They lost to one of their team managers in a car accident, and so our prayers go out to them and their whole family there. Yeah. But let's go ahead. A quick look at the upcoming schedule. We've got a bunch of more non-D1 games here before Tuesday we get back into conference play. And one game Tuesday, but the rest of the game's Thursday in conference play.
Yeah, how about Morehead State, Southern Indiana? I don't know what your New Year's Eve plans are, but if they do not include Morehead State at Southern Indiana, you're just not doing New Year's Eve.
I was going to say, did anyone tell Morehead that they don't have to play Alice Slade anymore now that Bradlin's no longer the head coach?
Maybe they signed a long-term contract with them. That was Spradlin's alma mater. Over in the Patriot League, Stalika, Colgate continues to lose games, but Holy Cross picked up a road win. Lehigh picked up a road win.
Yeah, with Colgate losing at home to Iona, I'm starting to believe that finally it's going to be a wide open race. So Americans emerge as a possible contender. Holy Cross is the only team that's actually has a winning record against D1. And yes, winning at Siena, that's pretty hard to win, at least by Patriot League standards. Lehigh going to Long Island, well, it is a road win, but not quite as tough as going to Albany would be.
Well, Rocco, what about the 1952 National Champion Holy Cross Crusaders? Did I get that year right? I think I did.
They've been tough. I mean, they have three pretty good road wins. If you look at the they won the Brown tournament, so one of those three wins was at Brown, of course. And then
I'm
the
sorry, it was 1947. That's the correct year. I
47. There you go. Thank
got it
you.
right.
Yeah, the ghost of Kuzi and Tom Heinsohn will haunt you for that one.
Quinnipiac and Siena were the other two just recently on the road for Holy Cross. So good sign they can win on the road. It's an interesting team. I think they do some things a little bit differently. They don't foul anybody, which works in certain matchups. They have an excellent 3-point shooting percentage in the last month, where they're 29th in the nation. So you know how that goes, Chad, with progression and regression from behind the arc. But the fact that they fire so many threes, they got a chance to knock anybody off in this particular league. Lehigh and American have also played well of late, at least in terms of their performances. Not a lot of data though either, because these teams took very long breaks for finals, as they always do. But I think it should be a very competitive league. A lot of different teams could come out of the league, which is exciting.
Here's the upcoming schedule. Last weekend of non-conference play, Bucknell at Syracuse, BU at Maine, Loyola at DePaul, and then Thursday we get into the start of conference play. But Griggs, over in the SoCon, Furman's sitting here at 12-1 with their win after their win at Harvard over the weekend.
Really good Furman team. I think that they're starting to set themselves apart in this league. I really like how Samford's been playing. I know I say that every week, but every week I continue to like how they've been playing, minus the drubbing they took at Arizona recently. But Furman, if you're going to highlight a team that can get there just on the sheer bulk of wins, like, could this team? When you look at the rest of the schedule, I see a lot of winnable games, and can they get to the 29-30 win mark and be one of those teams that sort of in mid to late February cracks the rankings and is on the bubble and maybe even inside of it just on the sheer girth of the number of wins? This is a tough league, but they can win a lot of those.
I'll throw a number out here that we like to highlight every now and then, though. Rocco, according to KenPom, they are the number one luckiest team in the nation. What that means is that they have been vastly outperforming their actual predictive metrics, which means that they've been winning games, a lot of close, tight games,
Yep.
and they should come back to earth, though, unfortunately.
That's the way it's playing out. They're playing terrific 3-point defense. I think that should have some sustainability. Sixth best in the country there. But I think, I would agree. They had a bunch of squeakers that, including that South Carolina State team that Xavier had to squeak one out with, but also with Gulf Coast, with Seattle, with Belmont at the beginning of the year. So they've had a lot of tight wins. Kansas beat them by 35, so they were nowhere near kind of that level, of course. So I think it'd be hard to put them in based on what we know now, even though wins above bubble would have them 30 on raw data. And I agree with Griggs, the fact that they're in the SoCon, not Conference USA, is a little bit better path to getting through this league with two losses or less. And I would be curious to see what the committee would do in that situation, as I always am. But I just don't. I think this team is PJ Smith and a lot of good role players, but I don't think they're as elite as some of these other teams we've talked about, like a Liberty or a UC San Diego, which means they could just as easily have a 3-game losing streak.
We scheduled to start a conference play this week on Wednesday. Furman is going to Western Carolina. Samford hosting Citadel. Stalika, over in the Southland Conference, where the McNeese finally won a game. Is that what we can say?
Well, they finally win a game at Louisiana. Granted, that's a Louisiana team that's a way under 500, so at least give them credit for not stubbing their toes here. Now they're going to have to
And I
win.
just made a coaching change on top of that, Louisiana. Yeah.
Yeah, like
Fort
changing.
McNeese is going to have to win the Southland Conference tournament if they're going to have any shot of being in the field, especially being under 500 against D1 competition in non-conference play.
Yeah, absolutely. A bit of a disappointment, but the path is still there. It's just that they got to win that. One of their wins had better be that last tournament game.
Yeah, as far as this week, we do get back into conference play. It needs to be the start of conference play for them. They've the one team that hasn't played a game yet, that they will be hosting New Orleans.
Let's see what.
A few other games up there. Lamar hosting Texas A&M San Antonio.
It's not,
Rocco,
yeah, it's
how?
not UTSA.
Well, I'm going to go to Sleeker for this one here. The SWAC,
Hello, wait.
which had a complete O for the last 7 days, complete O for. But you've got Alabama State and Bethune have won three D1 games. Southern has won two, but they're both notable. And then you got the rest of the league.
Yeah, Southern has the win at Louisiana Tech, so you're going to have to give them an edge right here. Alabama A&M was the only team that actually hosted a game during the week and ended up losing to a very respectable Samford team. And then you look at two teams in some of the HBCU classics. Alabama State loses to, as we touched on earlier, a hot Delaware State team. And Grambling, in addition to the loss at UC, they also lose by six to Norfolk State.
Yeah, it's the SWAC will get real interesting
Yeah.
in the next week or so here when we get in, if we finish the non-conference. Go ahead, Rocco, though.
What about this Bethune-Cookman team? They go to South Florida and win by eight, and then they hung in there with Davidson pretty close to end the break. They played a ton of bye games. They're only 3-9, but they did beat that North Dakota team that hung with Alabama all the way down to the wire. They beat the South Carolina State team that we've mentioned as a tough team. I think this Bethune-Cookman team's pretty sneaky. Keep your eye on them.
Keep your eye on Reggie Theus's squad there. Absolutely. They've got a bit of a test at Mississippi State Monday night.
Yes.
That might be a little over their head, a little bit over their head.
One more paycheck for the road.
Yep. And
Yeah.
then we'll get to conference play, though, and that's when the SWAC does become real fun.
Yes.
But Rocco, over in the Summit League, is it time to start really talking about this North Dakota State team?
Oh, absolutely. They're phenomenal. They've been killing everybody lately. I like, the Jakari White story. He's emerged as one of the best shooters in the country. They haven't lost since the Samford road game, which was the start of the tournament down there. And a long list of victims, and headlined by Butler, but also a road win at Weber State. That's a Weber State team that always plays well at home. They recently blasted Bakersfield and blasted Western Michigan. So this team is crushing it. Seventh longest active win streak in the country at eight in a row. Their field goal percentage numbers are off the charts, especially for under the radar. Fifth best in the country. Fourth best at 3-point shooting, which again, be careful because they could go cold at some point. But the way that they are playing and the snipers they have set up behind Jakari White are very, very deadly. And they're shooting the number one, according to Palm here, but number one percentage of their shots are from three. They shoot 55, nearly 55% of their attempts are from deep. So again, you get them on a cold night, you'll probably be able to pull off an upset, but they've been red hot lately.
And that's the type of team that a conference tournament situation is probably a bad spot for them, though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You have played two games back-to-back days or 3 days in a row, and that's where you can go cold and get knocked right out of your conference tournament, even if you win the regular season title. So,
Exactly. Yeah, but on the flip side of that, if they can sneak into March Madness and have that type of deadliness, they're the type of team that can knock off two high majors in a row.
Th this could be a team poised for a 13-4, 12-5 type of upset.
Absolutely. I think 12-line is where they're heading.
Well, a little too early to put teams on seed lines for anything official grades. We
It's not
got
too early.
a lot
Well,
of seed.
the Summit League is good, guys. Like, South Dakota
Oh,
State is not going anywhere. Kansas City is finally starting to figure things out. They had a great win over at Wichita State by 10. Yep. And then they beat ETSU, who's good, at home to wrap things up on a four-game win streak. They are the preseason pick. And then I think this St. Thomas team is no joke. And so you got four, I think, really solid teams coming into league play.
And St. Thomas starts the conference play at North Dakota State Thursday night, so circle that game.
That'd be awesome.
North Dakota took
Alabama to the wire.
Now, St. Thomas has to go to California for the game at Riverside Sunday before that game also, so a little bit of traveling here. But also circle Sunday, South Dakota State might be over their heads a bit with Alabama, just a bit.
Maybe.
Maybe. Who knows? Griggs, Sun Belt Conference. Arkansas State took down Coastal Carolina to start conference play this week.
Yeah, and they blew them into the sun. Now, Coastal Carolina, not a very strong team, but I mean, for Arkansas State to win as decisively as they did and to have the kind of year that they've had, I still like them more than anybody else. South Alabama is playing well. Texas State's had their moments. I still think App State might be able to put something together, although they haven't shown it yet. But if you're asking me who jumps off the page more than anyone else, it's Arkansas State, and by quite a bit more than anyone else.
Yeah. And like I said, we did start conference play on this past weekend. We have a little bit of non-conference stuff, a lot of non-D1 stuff, honestly, before we get back into conference play on Thursday.
We got to talk about the coaching situation in this league, Chad.
Yes. Go ahead, Rocco.
Yeah, so the major story, of course, is after a 1-0 start in league play, a really tough, of course, non-conference schedule for Louisiana Raging Cajuns, but they opened up with a big win over App State. The next morning, Coach Bob Marlin, the longest tenured coach in the league and the active winningest coach in Sun Belt history, gets fired. So very complicated time. They also were juggling a football coaching contract, which got extended, I think, within 24 hours of the same period. But this is major news in basketball because, of course, this particular conference plays their conference tournament in Pensacola, where 30 years ago, Bob Marlin was a legendary JUCO coach there. He was instrumental in getting this conference tournament to Pensacola. And you've seen here the last couple of years where the Cajuns always perform well down there. They actually just got a 5-year extension, but we will see a Bob Marlin-less Sun Belt tournament. And then the next day, overnight, the active winningest Sun Belt coach in Sun Belt history was Keith Richard of Louisiana Monroe, which has been around a very long time, at 124 Sun Belt wins. And he announced his retirement at the end of the season. So within a 24-hour span, we lost both state of Louisiana coaches and the two active winningest Sun Belt coaches in their conference's history. Pretty significant news out of Louisiana.
Yeah, and the Louisiana situation with the Raging Cajuns also, they lost their big guy before the season, too. Yeah, that was going to be the – I mean, and with him, we expected them to contend. Without him, we did not. And it's a shame that he lost his job there. And I hope if he wants to keep coaching, that he lands somewhere. I know he's been around for a while, but –
could be a Phil Martelli type of guy where you bring him into a high major as an assistant and do the X's and O's.
Mm-hmm. Sleeka, over in the WAC, the Lopes beat St. Louis by 1 point, and that's probably the most notable one for this past week.
Well, that's going to be one of the notable results.
Our second most notable. I forgot about Monday night. You want to hit Monday night, Sleeka? Go ahead. I won't torture Rocco with that one.
He's actually going to touch on Utah Valley right here because now they win a Beehive game. They've set themselves up as a possible contender along with Grand Canyon for the WAC right here. So the Wolverines still going to be looking for their first tournament bid in the Division One level.
Yeah, but Seattle, who's played Washington many, many times and never broke through. Rocco, I know you're a Washington guy, but Seattle went there and picked up the win.
Yeah, I mean, they were due. Last year, they were up 14 at halftime, losing double OT. They've been knocking on this door for a few years now. And the timing was really good, too, because Washington won the Apple Cup a couple nights before. They were finally feeling good about themselves. Kind of what you're looking for as the opponent. Also, the best player on Seattle, Matthew Alexander Moncrief, the transfer from Georgia and Oklahoma State, high-level player. He was out for a few games. He came back for this one. And they also got the debut of Kobe Williamson, their high-energy center from Australia. So two of their best players came back for the game. Perfect storm there. And Washington just quite honestly got their doors blown off from the beginning. I think it started off 16-3 Seattle. And a couple times it got tight, but kudos to Seattle U. They rejoined Division One in 08. They were 0-15 against Washington until Monday. And if you go all the way back to the 70s, it was 18 in a row. So just a really, really big deal for them. And great launching point. They get one more game against Nichols on Monday, but after that, it'll be a great launching point into WAC play.
Here's the upcoming schedule for the WAC. Grand Canyon, San Diego. That is a neutral court game. I'm not certain. I believe it's
LA.
Is it in LA? Okay, it's in LA.
Yeah, we've got a doubleheader with UCLA Gonzaga. It's the other game.
Off the Intuit Dome.
Yes. Yeah,
and I think there's some obscure streaming only available for the Grand Canyon San Diego half of that doubleheader, unfortunately. Then the Lopes will be hosting Bryant in a little cross country trip. So we're finishing up outside of conference play before we get into conference play another week or so here in the league. But that's all our regular conferences. So how about some mythical ones, Griggs?
Oh yes, the mythical ones.
We're just talking a little bit City of Utah. How about we start off in the Beehive, where Utah Valley did get the win over Weber State. It is now a three-way tie, Utah Valley.
Yeah, Utah Valley right in there, a big win for them. These conference games, you just got to throw the book out the window.
No conference games this week at the Beehive, so we'll be sitting at the same standings come next week. But we talked a little Front Range earlier also. We had that big Northern Colorado win over Denver, and they're only one game in the loss column behind Colorado.
Yeah, and that was a really close game to open the season, like a big conference game early on. Northern Colorado playing Colorado tough.
Also, no conference games covered this week in the Front Range, but or in the Back Range. This is down in Arizona. We did not get any conference games. Arizona State's still leading the way. We got to get some games in here, though.
Yeah, we do.
But none this week.
Well, we're going to get the second division of the Back Range against the first division of the Back Range.
How about the top range, Stalico? Wazoo powering through the league at 3-0 now.
Well, they're going to be powering through the top range, but they haven't gotten the wins against the another mythical conference that we'll get to a little bit later.
Yeah, a couple games coming up this week, though, in the top range. Montana, Eastern Washington, Montana State, and Idaho. So get those teams into some action, see if they can find a way to catch up with Wazoo. And, of course, our newest mythical conference, teams that just don't belong together, never would have belonged together, the Conference of Champions. UCLA after a 3-0 start. Oregon right behind them with that big win over Stanford this week, though.
Yeah.
No games either in this Conference of Champions. It's a slow week. Slow week this week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, conference play just,
Arizona State 3-0 in the Back Range, but no games yet in the Conference of Champions. You know, right. I mean, that's impressive to be in multiple mythical conferences, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's go to our Hoops HD top 10. We all submitted ballots here. And we got some honorable mentions here that did not quite make the top 10 this week. Include High Point, Kent State, Samford, North Dakota State, Seattle, Middle Tennessee, Grand Canyon, and Princeton. How about Seattle, Sleek, getting a vote there in an honorable mention after the performance against Washington?
And only for that performance against Washington. Their overall record.
But coming in number 10, Columbia. Only one loss of the season. Yep. Mm-hmm. At number 9, College of Charleston. I think that's their first time in the top 10 this year.
Yeah.
And two-way tie for 7th at Arkansas State team we just discussed, and Louisiana Tech out of Conference USA. At number 6, Bradley.
First college.
Yeah. Bradley coming at 6. At number 5, Furman out of the SoCon.
Yeah.
Fourth place, we had Liberty. That's our top team out of CUSA. And at number 3, UC Irvine, the Eaters, coming in at number 3.
Well, a little bit after their loss at Duquesne.
At number 2, Their conference mates, UC San Diego. Ooh. How about that? All the way up to number two in the Hoops HD top 10. You're the only one that did. at number one, and you can't, I could not vote the team number one. They are undefeated, of course. Do a little drum roll. No surprise. The Drake Bulldogs, who, if they keep winning, San Diego will move up to number one because Drake will no longer be under the radar, Griggs.
Right. Hey, get there one way or another.
Let's go ahead and go to final thoughts. Sleeka.
I was hoping to touch on this for the Monday podcast, but because of a work commitment, I was not able to make it on. So I have to highlight Greg Campy and his choice of ugly sweaters over the holiday break. I mean, he and Tom Izzo had some matching Grinch sweaters for their game between Oakland and Michigan State at Little Caesars Arena. But we also had a bit of a bonus holiday sweater because he also had a special Merry Grinchmas t-shirt going on last night for their final game in the Diamond Head Classic. But Campy started off a couple of years ago with a sweater that involved a moose on both ends.
There have been some great sweaters, especially out of Campy. Rocco.
Yeah, I wanted to give a little shout out to Miles Corey of South Alabama. He was an afterthought, I think, in the preseason. NAIA transfer with 1 year of eligibility out of William Jessup College in California. Heck of a find for Richie Riley. He averaged 16.9 at William Jessup last year as a senior for the Warriors. Comes over to South Alabama, and he's just been absolutely on fire. He's averaging 18.5, so he averages more at the Division I level, Sun Belt level, than he did in NAIA at this point, leading this Jaguar team. And he's crushing it across almost every measurable, whether it's two-point field goal percentage, three-point field goal percentage, defense, assist-to-turnover ratio is phenomenal. He's getting steals on defense. He's just been the heart and soul so far of South Alabama and giving them a real chance to compete for a championship, a team we didn't really know much about coming into the year. So I've been really intrigued by his story and even more so sharing the same home state as him originally. So keep your eye on Miles. And then I think beyond that, I just wanted to say, you know, conference play coming up again in a lot of these leagues. We talked about the Horizon on Monday. I know everybody's had a nice relaxing break. I think it's been good for us too, the four of us. But watch out for Saturday and beyond because it's going to come at us fast and these conference races are really going to heat up pretty much immediately.
They will. Greg, you want to finish off the show?
Yes, this is more rooted in under the radar than it is presently in under the radar. Jim Larrañaga did suddenly announce his retirement. And he coached the George Mason team in 2006 that made the Final Four. Now, George Mason currently in the Atlantic 10, nobody would even call them or consider them under the radar now. But at the time, they were in the Colonial, and they really were. And it felt like at that moment, at least to me, and I think to a lot of us, we've talked about it before, that a glass ceiling had been broken. It was the first time under the radar, whatever that classification that we now call under the radar is, had seen a team get to the Final Four. The previous year, we saw Southern Illinois was and still is under the radar on a protected seed. So while it was sort of I think that was an important time for the under-the-radar conferences and the way everybody thinks of them. Butler later went on to be the national runner-up 2 years in a row. Again, not under the radar now, but they were then. Davidson, a short time after that, didn't make it all the way to the Final Four, but got very, very close. I think that if you follow the under-the-radar conferences and if you happen to be attached to one or work at one or have gone to one or have fetched your team, in a way it felt like George Mason was winning it for all of us. So I still appreciated that.
Yeah, that was an incredible – I still remember that game, that Elite Eight game against UConn. That was one of those games that I'll never forget. But I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We will be back with our last show of 2024 on Monday night with our Hoops HD report and our first show of 2025 next week with our Under the Radar. But on behalf of John Sleeka, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, check him out, of course, at Bracketeer.org. Follow him on Twitter and Blue Sky and what else? Instagram, Tumblr, TikTok, No, none of
Just
those.
keep going. Keep going. Yeah, I'm not gonna stop here.
He's at all social media. He's at all games. He's everywhere. But I want to thank everyone for joining us. If we don't see you, if you're not here to see our show Monday night, have a wonderful New Year and talk to you all again real soon.